Welcome back to Living Lab Radio. I'm Heather Goldstone. President Donald Trump and folks in Washington can't stop talking about Russia. It seems we can't either. Last week, we heard about the state of international science cooperation in the Arctic and how that might spill over into better relations in other arenas. Today, we turn our attention to the state of science and technological innovation in Russia. Lauren Graham is Professor Emeritus of the History of Science at Massachusetts Institute of Technology and Harvard University. Welcome to the show.
It's very nice to be here.
If we go back 50 or so years, I mean, Russia was the first to put a person into space. They were really the ones to beat in terms of technological innovation. But somewhere in the 90s, with the collapse of the Soviet Union, I mean, that brought about the near collapse of science in Russia.
It did.
What is the state of things now?
Well, many people think that science in Russia is dead, but that is not correct, in my opinion.
Well, that's good news, I guess.
It's suffered tremendous losses. The brain drain in fields like physics and mathematics has been enormous. And if you go around to almost any physics department in a good university in the United States and look down the roster of the professors, you'll probably find a Russian or two. So the losses have been enormous, and not just personnel, but financial and then organizational. There are all kinds of organizational problems. So, yes, Russian science is much weaker than it once was, but it's alive and it still has a chance.
Are there strong areas, particularly strong areas? And for that matter, is computer science one of them? I mean, we've been hearing about Russian hacking prowess.
Information technology
is definitely a strong suit.
It's definitely a strong suit. Let me just make that point in a very simple way. Each year, IBM sponsors a contest for undergraduate students from over the world in computer programming. Russians have won first prize for the last 8 years straight. No American university has won first prize in that contest since 1990. Russians tend to be very good in any field that is mental, an act of the mind, programming, mathematics, theoretical physics. They tend to be much poorer in any area where there's a strong interaction with commercial or practical interests.
Well, that was going to be my next question. I mean, you're talking about this incredible intellectual prowess in information technology, computer science, and yet there are no Russian cell phones, computers,
absolutely not,
consumer technology products recognize.
When's the last time you went into an electronics store and saw a gadget you wanted and turned it over and saw made in Russia? Probably never.
So,
and it's a remarkable thing.
Why
that they can
is
be
that?
So good in the theory and in the mental contest and so poor in commercialization.
This is something you've looked into. I mean, do you have an explanation for that at this point?
I've written a book about it, but the explanation is a little complicated. It has to do with many things. Poor protection of intellectual property, a very bad legal system, no investors, a bad economic scene. All these things come together. Just take intellectual property and the legal system. Every large company in the United States, Google, Microsoft, you name it, they have a whole platoon of lawyers, and they're involved in legal disputes all the time. The Russian legal system is so bad that they can't protect their interests.
How do Russian scientists feel about that? Is it a point of frustration?
It's not as much a point of frustration as it ought to be, because the Russians are so proud of how good they are in these purely intellectual feats. Mathematics, theoretical physics, computer programming, that they tend to think, and this is a real problem, and in my view, a mistake, they can't tend to think that being interested in business or commercialization is getting your hands dirty, doing something not really dignified. And that hurts them. That means that we've heard of Russian great programmers, but have we ever heard of a Steve Jobs, the equivalent of Steve Jobs, a person who runs a company and makes something great out of it on the basis of products? That they can't do.
Is that a pervasive part of Russian culture? I mean, you know, you're not just talking about scientists thinking that that's not pure science, but then that's also about the cultural who becomes a celebrity and what's respected.
Absolutely.
More broadly.
And it goes back even into the 19th century. If you look at Russian literature, the great writers, the businessman is usually portrayed in that literature as a narrow-minded, philistine, grubbing, money-grubbing person, not an attractive person. The idea that there could have been a hero in Russian literature in the 19th century, equivalent to, let's say, Horatio Alger in American literature, I know it's a little pathetic example, but nonetheless, there's just nothing like that in Russia. It couldn't be.
And yet there have been and continue to be efforts to reform and change this situation. There's the city of Skolkovo, which has kind of been compared to, or not necessarily being compared yet, but the goal is to create something like Silicon Valley for Russia. And in fact, MIT is involved in
absolutely
trying to revamp engineering education.
And I personally have been involved.
So I wonder, though, when you say that the scientists, it's not as much of a sore point for them as you think it should be, is this just something that we Americans are imposing on them, or do they really want this reform and this change and this greater ability to translate intellectual ideas into commercial products?
They say they want it. You go through the literature, all the government leaders, they say we've got to become a knowledge economy. We've got to stop depending on oil and gas for our economic strength and become a knowledge economy. So you read speeches, you read articles, it's all there. It just doesn't happen. And Skolkovo now, you know, it's been around for about 7 or 8 years. It isn't succeeding. When I say it isn't succeeding, I don't mean there aren't good people there. There are very good people there, very good. But what was the point of Skolkovo? The point of Skolkovo was to change this situation and to get commercial products based upon high technology. Can you name them?
No.
There are always a few exceptions, but not much.
We've touched on this social framework. There's also, as you already mentioned, the politics and the economics and legal framework that goes into whether or not it is possible, even if you have the desire, to translate an idea into a patented and saleable commercial technology.
Absolutely. I'll just give you one little example. It's a little historical, but the lesson is still valid today. We all say that Thomas Edison invented the electric light bulb, right? He didn't. There were quite a few people who had electrical light bulbs before he did, and two of them were Russians. What happened to the Russians who developed, one of them developed a good incandescent electric light bulb 6 years before Edison did?
I'm guessing he didn't patent and commercialize it.
He went belly up. He went bankrupt.
How then do you think change could happen? I mean, is it even possible in the current political and security situation that where Russia is right now? Is it even possible to make the kinds of changes?
Well, of course,
that
anything is possible. And so, yes, changes could be made. But under Putin, they're not very likely to happen. There have been entrepreneurs, a few entrepreneurs, in Russia under Putin. And normally, whenever they get so strong that they are seen by him as a possible threat, he runs them out.
I wonder, you've written your most recent book about an example of one scientific idea that completely fell out of favor in most of the world and yet survived as a relatively popular idea within Russian science, which to me begs the question of how much communication and collaboration is there between the Russian science community and the rest of the international science community.
There is a lot of collaboration. But if you ask me, do I think there's as much collaboration right now in science between Russian scientists and American scientists as there are between Chinese scientists and American scientists? The Chinese, the collaboration is deeper. That's a little counterintuitive, and it's a fairly recent thing, last 20 years. But Russians, of course, work with Western scientists. but not enough, not nearly enough.
Your example there with China highlights the idea that science collaboration, the degree of science collaboration between individuals in two different countries is not necessarily tied to the overall state of diplomatic or political
Good
relationships
point.
Between those two countries. We heard last week from Paul Berkman at the Fletcher School at Tufts University on the role of science cooperation in being able to foster better diplomatic relations beyond the science sphere. Do you think that's something that could happen with Russia in these efforts to work between U.S. and Russian institutions and change the way that science and innovation is done in Russia? Could that bleed over into better U.S.-Russia relations?
The historical record of science collaboration resulting in or causing better general relations and diplomatic relations is weak. Science collaboration does help, particularly around the margins. Lots of personal friendships are founded on the basis of it. But if we're asking for big changes in terms of foreign policy, science can't do it.
You've said that the failure of Russia to capitalize on its science is actually one of the main things holding them back from achieving democracy. Make that argument.
Well, I was with you right up until achieving democracy. First, let me just say this, that Russia is an extraordinary case. I don't know of another country in the world that has had such a strong tradition in the theoretical sciences as it has had now for a couple of centuries. Lobachevsky, Mendeleev, 19th century, you know, mathematics, chemistry. So strong a tradition in science and so weak a tradition in commercial technology. I'm leaving military to the side. In commercial technology, it's just extraordinary. I don't think there's another country in the world that has that strange situation. Can it change? Yes. And in fact, I'm convinced that eventually it will change. But I'm not sure that I'll see it in my lifetime. I'm positive we won't see it in Putin's lifetime.
I want to go back to this connection, though, between maybe not just science, but technological innovation and commercialization of technology and democracy. Do you see a link between, I mean, you've already said that you don't think the kinds of changes that could promote more commercialization of technology will happen under Putin. Is there an inherent link between the government structure and the ability to make this kind of innovation?
There is, but it's the causal link. Arrows may run in the other direction. I would say that the same kind of political order that's good for democracy and human rights and a healthy society is good for science.
I want to ask perhaps a sensitive question. I mean, given the current state of U.S.-Russia relations, the concerns about alleged hacking of U.S. government officials by Russia, is there maybe a disincentive there? Do we really want to boost Russian science and technological capacity if, in fact, they might use it to come after us?
In some military areas, that might be valid. But in the major areas of basic science, I don't think so. After all, we had scientific exchange programs. I participated in them in the old Soviet days. In the middle of the Cold War, there were American scientists in Russia, Soviet Union, and Soviet scientists in the United States. By and large, we didn't feel that we were helping them to build up their capacity against us, nor vice versa. So I don't think that's a major factor.
Lauren Graham is Professor Emeritus of the History of Science at Massachusetts Institute of Technology and Harvard University. Lauren, thanks so much.
You're certainly welcome.
And that's our show. Until next week, this is Living Lab Radio. You can like us on Facebook or follow us on Twitter. I'm Heather Goldstone. Thanks for listening.